Up next, we have our book reading program, Ohomoni Iyotaka, read by Gail Hubling.
The Long Knives Are Crying, a novel by Joseph M. Marshall III. Chapter 39, The Desperate Trail. Strangely, Little Feather did not hear the thunderous crack of his rifle, but he did feel it slam into his shoulder. Whether it had been a hit or a miss, he did not know. Although he could not define it in so many words, he felt changed by the simple act of firing at the enemy. He was not brash enough to think that he had suddenly become a warrior, a full-fledged fighting man, but he had become a defender of the people. Ducking below the edge of the bank, he opened the breech, took out the empty round, and slid in another. Boom! He jumped at the sudden blast. Nearby, Bear had fired his old muzzleloader. Blue smoke still hung in the air. Farther down the bank, other warriors opened fire at the long knives in the grove. Ba-boom, boom, boom! A voice came from somewhere down the line. Get down! The long knives will return fire. Keep your heads down! In the next instant, rounds tore the air above their heads or plowed into the soil in front of the bank, followed by muzzle blasts from within the trees. Horntail and Bear stared at one another. Their complaints about missing out on the battle where the woman saved a brother seemed so foolish now. Looking for Crazy Horse or Gaul, Grey Bull loped his horse in a southwesterly direction, away from the trees where all of the Lakota firing was directed. Strangely, he was drawn to the sounds of gunfire and the life and death struggle ensuing on the floodplain. But even as he wished for the strength of his youth, he was subdued by the sight of some Lakota and a few Cheyenne warriors helping wounded men. Because of the constantly moving mounted warriors, he couldn't immediately see either of the war leaders. He guessed that Gaul was riding his favorite black gelding. He saw several black horses, but none of them was carrying a big man. Grey Bull reined his horse to a stop in the meadow where the Long Knives had their skirmish line. He could see blue-clad bodies in the grass where they had fallen, forming a haphazard line leading to the river. A man closer to him had been stripped of his rifle, six-shooter, and bullet belt. A particularly sharp exchange of firing pulled his attention to the east. Grable knew he had to get closer if he wanted to get a glimpse of Crazy Horse or Gaul. Northwest of the village and southeast of the Greasy Grass River confluence was the Bighorn River. A hunter was heading home, leading a pack horse carrying a gutted elk. The air was hot, though an occasional breeze brought momentary relief. Nuances of weather never bothered taking a life. It was a part of life. He had left the village well before dawn, riding out quietly past the horse herd and the guards. Someone had told him that the black-tailed deer along the Bighorn were fat and his wife's meat containers were nearly empty. Incredibly, he had all but stumbled onto the cow elk grazing along the river bottom soon after he had hidden his horses. At a narrow creek, taking a life stopped to let the horses drink. Strangely, he thought he heard a man's fingers tapping on a dry log. Tilting his head, he listened, but all he could hear was the breeze whispering through the grass and the horses sipping water. Ever watchful, the warrior scrutinized the surrounding prairie. Nothing was out in the open. On a hot day, animals stayed in the shade. The tapping came again. Taken alive, sat motionless. This time, the noise persisted longer, and then it was gone. Something in the distance was making the noise. At first he thought a woodpecker, but it was not a uniform tapping. Rather, it was like several woodpeckers tapping at once and not in unison. Taken alive, clucked to his horses and pulled them away from the water. If he put them in a low lope, he would be home shortly. As Black Shield rode north, more and more men were moving past him, heading toward the southern end of the camp, drawn toward the gunfire. But surprisingly, many women and children, old men and boys were still in camp. He motioned to an old warrior sitting next to a lodge with a rifle at his knee and stopped. My friend, he called out, we think there may be long knives on the other side of the river behind those hills. I have thought about that, the old warrior returned. They might come down the slope, said Black Shield. They might, the old man agreed. But that would expose them too much. I think they will look for a crossing. He pointed north, the one up there. I think you are right, so we must watch that crossing. The old warrior smiled. My legs are not as fast as they once were, but my eyes still see well enough, he said. Well enough to aim this rifle. Good, we need as many men as we can find to help keep watch. Black Shield turned his horse north. I will meet you at the crossing and anyone else you can bring. as Black Shield continued north, stopping to talk to any old man who had a weapon and could help watch the Medicine Tail crossing. He didn't see the faces of the two riders who flashed past him or realize that one of them was a woman. Buffalo Calf rode armed with 2 6-shooters, rode with her husband Black Coyote. To the south, along the riverbank north of the grove of trees where the Long Knives had found cover, a warrior crawled along the line of men scattered behind the bank. "Take careful aim," Blunt Arrow advised. "Do not hurry your shot." Little Feather noted the look of experience and air of competence about the man. "Shoot, get down, reload, and wait for them to return fire," the man went on. "Then fire again. Do not show any more than your head and shoulders over this ledge. Many of our men are in the open on the other side with no cover. Make the Long Knives shoot at us and use up their bullets." As Blunt Arrow went past, Little Feather glanced at Bear and Horntail, then cautiously raised himself up above the edge of the bank. Sliding his rifle forward, he took careful aim. In his side vision, he saw Bear doing the same, and other men as well farther down the line. Then the rifles blasted. Little Feather heard screams from inside the grove, screams of men and horses. He ducked down again quickly. Grey Bull recognized a man galloping toward him. Yellow Wolf slid his horse to a stop. "Do you know where Crazy Horse is?" he asked the younger man immediately. Yellow Wolf shook his head. "I just got here," he said. "He is probably over there where all the shooting is. I need to find him. We saw Long Knives on the hills across the river," Grey Bull explained. "We need to tell him in Gaul. If all of our fighters are here, there will be no one to defend the east side of the village. But Black Shield thinks the Long Knives will go to the Medicine Tail crossing, the Dry Creek. He is gathering men to wait there just in case." Yellow Wolf pulled out his 6-shooter to check that it was loaded and then his rifle. "I will find one of them, Uncle," he assured the older man, "and tell them. Where will you be?" "I have a feeling Worm and High Eagle and the other medicine men will need help treating our wounded," Grey Bull replied. "Watch yourself, Uncle," the younger man said, and rode toward the fighting. Cloud joined Crazy Horse and several other warriors south of a low rise that was slightly more than 100 paces from the trees. It did not provide complete cover, but it was enough to prevent the Long Knives from seeing them. "Our men are firing from the north side of the trees," Crazy Horse said. "We need to get word to them to increase their firing and keep it up. It would give us a chance to move in closer from the west and south." "I will find a messenger," Black Moon offered. "Good. As soon as we hear sustained firing, we will charge," Crazy Horse said. Grey Bull reached the end of the Hunkpapa circle. Along the way, he passed men helping wounded comrades back to the village. He stopped at Sitting Bull's lodge and noticed that a few boys were digging a large fire pit and others were bringing stones from the river. Still others were gathering piles of dry firewood. Nearby, Sitting Bull, with 2 women helping, was already leaning over a wounded man. "Uncle," Grey Bull called out, "do you need my help?" After a moment, the medicine man looked up. "Perhaps. Later, when the enemy is driven away, I will have a cleansing ceremony, so I will need to build a sweat lodge." Grey Bull dismounted. "I can help with that," he said. The medicine man pointed toward a pile of freshly cut red willow saplings, which would be the frame of the dome-shaped structure. After retracing the route he had taken earlier that morning, Taken Alive gained the top of a hill northwest of the sprawling village. With the mid-afternoon angle of the sun, he had a clear view of the village site. Although he could not see the lodges in detail, he was able to pick out the nearly numberless dark specks that indicated the horse herd, which was scattered farther about than it had been this morning. His eyes roved south, beyond the large groves of cottonwood trees, where some kind of movement was noticeable. As he was about to ride down the hill, a slight movement inside some shrubs to his left caught his attention. As his hand grabbed the handle of his 6-shooter, he saw it again, a horse flickering its tail. Peering into the trees, he saw the outlines of people. A slender young warrior galloped his horse into a thicket at a bend in the river. After dismounting smoothly, he fashioned a bridle from the rein and tied the lead to a branch in practically the same motion. Long black braids bouncing, he dashed toward the warriors positioned along the river bank, keeping low. Little Feather watched him come, envious of the slender but muscular frame and young man's fluid cat-like movements. He stopped next to Blunt Arrow, his face intense but his manner calm. "Black Moon and Crazy Horse sent me. I am Red Horse," he said, hardly panting. "They want you to increase your firing and keep the Long Knives engaged with you. Keep their attention. When you do, a Crazy Horse and the men on horseback will charge him from the other side." Blunt Arrow nodded. "I am Blunt Arrow." As soon as I inform every one of these men, we will do it. Taken alive, looked at the 10 or 12 faces all around him, mostly children and 4 young women. He didn't know any of the women. They told him they had been hiding after they had fled from the village. So they are attacked on the south end, he asked. Yes, one of the women replied. They told us to take the children and run in case the Long Knives broke through. A wise thing, he told her. From what I could see, something is happening at the south end. I do not think they broke through. He paused, mentally planning even as he talked. I see you have food and water. I have a large flask that I will leave with you, and I will leave the pack horse and elk here. Do not worry, we will drive them away, if they have not done so already. He stood to leave, looking for a last time at the small faces, uncertainty and apprehension reflected in their dark, innocent eyes. It will be all right, he promised. It will be all right. Red Horse found Black Moon and Crazy Horse. A man named Blunt Arrow is there, he reported. He will make it happen. Good, said Crazy Horse. Now we must gather our men and prepare to charge. Gray Bull worked quickly to bend the red willow saplings and tie them together. Most of the frame was already completed, bound together with thin strings of green bark. After Sitting Bull had blessed the sight in the wood, Gray Bull had started his task, trying to concentrate. But it was difficult not to think of the battle raging near the Hunkpapa camp. As he bent down to grab another long sapling, the few quick sporadic shots he had been hearing evolved into a continuous barrage. Blunt Arrow had devised an effective plan, knowing that the 40 or so men along the bank were using a variety of weapons. One other man had a repeating rifle, while everyone else had a single shot. However, the breech loaders could be reloaded much faster than the muzzle loaders. Every other man in line would fire simultaneously, and the other men would fire together while the first group was reloading. Consequently, the first few volleys became unrelenting fire poured into the grove of trees, effectively providing no chance for the Long Knives to return fire. Bullets tore through the leaves and shrubbery, most of them striking flesh or tree trunks. Men cried out in surprise and pain, and the horses screamed as well. Crazy Horse launched his charge from the southwest, knowing that Blunt Arrow's men were firing from the north. The thunder from the hooves of nearly 100 horses could not be heard as they were masked by the continuous gunfire. As a wide front, the charge advanced swiftly. Crazy Horse held his fire until he could plainly see the dark outlines of the enemy inside the sheltered trees. Then he opened fire. At that signal, nearly 100 muzzle blasts rent the air, propelling death. Before the charges reached the grove, Long Knives burst out of it, heading in the southeasterly direction. Crazy Horse and his men veered right in pursuit. At a flat out gallop, Cloud slid his rifle into its elk hide case and drew the six-shooter from his belt. Closing in on the fleeing enemy, he saw several of the scouts. He despised them, though he understood why the Crow and Arikara would work for the Long Knives. As a nation by themselves, they could not defeat the Lakota and Cheyenne alliance, and thereby hoped that the Long Knives could do it for them. But he had heard that a few Lakota were scouting for the enemy as well. That he could not understand at all. He took aim at a Long Knife, mercilessly gouging his spurs into his horse's already bloody sides and fired. The man jerked from the impact of the bullet and flopped from the saddle. Like wolves after a herd of hapless deer, the warrior swept in among the Long Knives. Slightly ahead of him, Cloud saw a warrior swing a horn-tipped club and knock a man off his horse. He had the sensation of being part of a surging flood sweeping away everything in its path. A lone warrior swept in from the west and joined the charge. Taken Alive had stripped off his shirt and was leaning over as his horse flew across the open floodplain. Like Cloud, he quickly put away his rifle and drew the six-shooter, knowing that close combat was imminent. He had seen the Long Knife streaming out of the trees like a flock of sparrows trying to elude an attacking hawk. Blunt Arrow was the first to jump over the bank, realizing that the Long Knives were fleeing, though all the men along the bank followed in an instant. Little Feather reached into his bullet bag as he ran. He had 2 bullets left. Horntail had always been a good runner and soon outdistanced most of the other his bow ready. Shoulder to shoulder with Blunt Arrow, Bear entered the grove and saw the bodies of men and horses scattered in the grass and shrubs. Look out, Blunt Arrow warned. The body was moving and a shot blasted from behind Bear, startling him. The body jerked. As he stepped forward, Bear saw that it was a black-skinned man. The dying man reached up a hand and spoke in Lakota. Help me. Do not kill me. Another shot boomed and the man jerked once again. This time his dark eyes turned blank. I know him, Blunt Arrow hissed. He should have known better than to throw in with the long knives. Warriors quickly stripped the rifles and pistols from dead long knives and unbuckled the black belts to which bullet cases were attached. Bear grabbed one of the square cases and took out the bullets. Horntail took a rifle and a bullet case and knelt to load it. Little Feather was momentarily immobilized, staring at the dead bodies. Come on, Blunt Arrow shouted and pointed southeast. The battle is going that way. Without waiting, he ran out of the grove, other warriors close behind. Horntail grabbed Little Feather and then saw what the young man was staring at. It was a dead scout. Most of his head was gone, likely splattered by a bullet. Blood was splashed over the grass as if poured from a bucket. Come on, Horntail said gently. I guess we will see more of that sort of thing. Emerging from the grove, the three young men saw that the fleeing Long Knives and the relentless pursuing were moving away swiftly. Several horses with saddles and without riders were caught in the flow, and Long Knife bodies already dotted the plain. Gunshots reverberated along the river. Cloud veered left to get out of the way of a knot of warriors. Angling for a clear shot, he fired and quickly picked another target. He heard a hollow thud and felt his horse begin to stumble badly. Instinctively, he clinched with his legs and grabbed a handful of mane. In the next instant, he knew he was going down. Cloud rolled free of the horse, but he felt the hard jolt of forcing the air. From his lungs. He gathered his knees beneath him and still bent over with his forehead in the grass. He was trying to catch his breath. The horse was dead, he knew. Somewhere in the back of his slightly dizzy mind was a thought to grab his rifle from the neck rope of the dead animal. Moaning in pain, he saw the cylinder from his pistol lying in the grass next to his knee. As he reached for it, noise and motion suddenly crashed into his awareness. Something was moving on his left. Something was bearing down on him. Finally, drawing a breath, he rolled over. As his vision cleared, he saw the outline of a man with the hairstyle of a crow. Cloud rolled left over his shoulder and reached out toward the horse and his rifle, but it was beyond his reach. Pieces of grass and clouds of dirt rained on him as the horse slid to a stop. Remembering the knife at his belt, he reached around for it. Still shaken by the hard, jarring fall, he was able only to rise to his knees, and he saw the black muzzle of a rifle less than a hand's width from his face. His instinct was to grab the rifle and pull it aside until he heard a voice. Friend, the voice said in Lakota. Cloud looked up and saw a scar on the crow's face that ran from his right ear down to the corner of his mouth. There was recognition in the intense dark eyes. Friend, Broken Hand repeated. The muzzle of the rifle lifted. For an instant, Cloud locked eyes with the man. Images of snow and a young man leading a horse with buffalo meat loaded on drag poles rushed in. And then he was gone. He watched him go. Broken Hand did not look back as he galloped away. Drawing deep breaths to gather himself, Cloud crawled toward the dead horse to retrieve his rifle. Every part of his body ached. Loose horses were running about nervously here and there. He would need to catch one somehow. Taking a live watch, warriors ahead of him ride in among the Long Knives and fire at close range. Some of the Long Knives fired back, but ineffectively. Inexorably, the enemy was being pushed toward the river. Beyond the northern end of the large encampment, Little Bird and his family walked leisurely along the river. They had been picking peppermint and trying their hand at fishing with a trap. When they came to the clearing at the northern edge of the Cheyenne camp, he immediately noticed some activity. Cheyenne warriors were mounting their horses, weapons in hand. Little Bird hurried forward. "What is happening?" he asked the young man near a lodge. The young man seemed surprised at the question. Long Knives, he replied. They attacked the Humpapa camp. Little Bird turned to stand on the hill and his two sons. Come, he said, we have to get back to our lodge. The young Cheyenne warrior mounted his horse and loped past them as they ran. To the south, Yellow Wolf rode into a thicket above the river to see a man he recognized standing behind him, beside a horse. Uncle, he called out, I was sent to find you. Gaul looked up, forearms leaning across the withers of his horse, watching the Long Knives crossing the river. His only weapon was a small iron hatchet in his hands, and he was shirtless, sweat dotting his face. The gunfire was steady, mostly coming from the warriors in pursuit. Yellow Wolf could immediately sense the man's deep anger. Grey Wolf saw Long Knives across the river up on the hilltops, he told him. He was afraid they might cross the river and attack the camps. Then we must do something, Gaul replied, but it sounded more like a growl. I will take a few men and have a look. With that laconic reply, he mounted his black gilding and turned northwest, oblivious to the gunfire. Something about the big man's demeanor sent a shiver up Yellow Wolf's back. In the next instant, Gaul was out of sight, and Yellow Wolf turned his attention to the raging fight on both sides of the river. Long Knives had crossed and were climbing a steep slope on the other side. Exposed on the slope, they were easy targets. The gunfire did not let up, and the Long Knives cried out and fell. The east bank of the river was bare, with very little cover, and low thickets grew on the west side. On both sides, there were dead Long Knives horses. Wounded horses stood motionless, some with their heads down and quivering. Immobilized by shock and pain or by a badly shattered leg, many were bleeding profusely. And everywhere there were warriors pursuing relentlessly, mercilessly, killing the enemy. Little Bird finished tying his encased rifle to the neck rope of his horse and turned to face his anxious family. He pointed to the six-shooters he had given to each of his sons. "You know how to use those," he said. "Take care of your mother." They nodded silently, their eyes wide. Even as far north as the Oglala camp, the gunfire from the south could be heard, though faintly. He stepped in front of stands on the hill. "I heard that many women and children fled northwest. Perhaps you should as well," he suggested. She shook her head. "We will wait for you here. Take care of yourself." Bear and Little Feather moved out of the grove as Horntail stopped to take a last look at the dead Long Knives. He knew his friends were in the trees somewhere ahead of him, but he couldn't see them. So he trotted through an opening to his left and emerged in a small clearing just north of where the Long Knives were fleeing across the river. As he started to quicken his steps, he almost stumbled over a very young warrior curled in the grass who was holding his arms across his abdomen. His breathing labored as blood oozed out of him. "They shot me," he moaned. "I am shot." Horntail looked around and saw a loose horse, a Long Knife horse with a wound of its own, but it was moving. He walked over slowly and grabbed its reins. It walked with a slight limp, but it moved well enough. Horntail led it to the boy. "My friend," he said, bending down, "I want to put you on this horse and you can go back to the village." The boy looked up, his eyes clouded with pain. He was too far gone. "I will put you on the horse and take you back," Horntail said, leaning down to speak directly into the boy's ear. Laying aside his newly acquired rifle, Horntail slid his forearms under the wounded warrior's legs and back and lifted. It was an effort to lift him up to the saddle of the tall horse, but with a mighty grunt he did it. All the while the boy kept his arms across his bloody abdomen. Horntail took a brief moment to slip the boy's feet into the stirrups to help him balance. Taking up his rifle, he led the horse away, hoping the boy would not fall. He turned and glanced briefly over his shoulder. Long Knives were still scrambling up the steep, broken slopes on the other side, the desperate trail marked with their dead. Mounted warriors splashed across the river after their stumbling and falling enemy. Punctuating it all was the gunfire. Far downriver and up another steep slope, 10 riders urged their tired horses up the incline. Gaul led the way, their horses winded. They reached the crest of the ridge and went down the east slope. Breezes whipped around them, bending the tall grass to and fro. As the slope leveled into a narrow plateau, Gaul stopped and pointed. In front of them was a trail of matted grass, and from the direction the flattened grass was facing, it looked like many horses had gone north. Grey Wolf had seen something. Gaul said as much, but the horses and the riders who had made the trail were nowhere in sight. "Shall we follow that trail, Uncle?" asked the young Hunkapapa warrior. "No," Gaul replied. "Our ammunition is low. There are only a few of us, and we do not want to give the Long Knives the advantage. No, we will cross back to the village. We will cross back down to the village, gather more men and ammunition, and then head for Medicine Tail Crossing. That is where these Long Knives are going. It is an easy crossing, and it would put them in the middle of the village. We cannot let them do that." South of them, guns were still firing. And that concludes Chapter 39.
This program is funded in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Thank you for listening to Ohomani Iotaka on KDKO 89.5 FM.